to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is Tulsa Public School Superintendent Dr. Keith Ballard. Like every school system administrator in the state, Ballard has tried hard over the last few years to meet the new realities of state aid. It is currently lower than it was 4 years ago. Last week, the superintendent announced major cuts in classroom staffing, a loss of 150 teaching positions in the system that will be lost through attrition, not layoffs, but that will increase classroom size and could endanger some electives and low-enrollment upper-level classes on the secondary school level. This coming in a time when state revenues are actually increasing. Dr. Keith Ballard is our guest today to talk about the cuts and the new reality of lesser funding for education. Superintendent Ballard, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Sure. It's good to be with you, Rich.
You were talking to the board and also to a number of school sites about the expected classroom staff size for this upcoming school year.
Right.
You're expecting to reduce it by about 150 positions through attrition. Explain the conditions that led to that number.
Well, first, we are anticipating that a decrease in budget will cause us to have to attrition out 75 teaching positions, Rich. What we do is we have an allocation formula that we follow that speaks to how many teachers we will have at each site. And we recommended to the board, and it was approved, that we make some changes in that allocation formula. And that directly impacts the number of teachers that we would hire. And while on the surface the changes don't look like a lot, really you're talking about averages is what you're talking about. We recommended no change in pre-K and K, and one going up, one per class size through the sixth grade, and then going up two on up through high school. But here's what has happened. 2 years ago, we received $7.6 million in job stimulus fund. That was the ARRA stimulus dollars, and we got $7.6 million. And the first year, we spent $2 million, and we made a decision at that time to reserve as much money as we could for this school year. In fact, we even received some national recognition because we were one of the urban districts that said, we're not going to spend it all in that first year. And they had to go to the United States Department of Education and find out if we could delay spending that into the second year, and they ultimately ruled that we could. So the first year we spent $2 million, and then this year we reserved $5.6 million of the jobs money. So we had that money to help keep a status quo, and we made no changes whatsoever in our teacher allocation formula. But obviously, we knew that that money was going to go away. I was kind of banking on a couple of things, primarily that conditions would change statewide. There would be more revenue that would accrue to the state coffers, maybe during, you know, this year, going into next year. I was right about that. There are more dollars that are coming into the state coffers. Unfortunately, the state legislature at this time has only talked about a flat budget, even though there are additional revenues in the budget. I was hoping that they would just try and restore some of the dollars back through the state funding formula, but that results in the loss of the first 75 jobs. Now, once again, you're right in your question, through attrition. We're not planning on doing any involuntary reduction in force. So we plan on, through attrition, absorbing those dollars, and we're taking that into the context of the overall budget, and where we think we'll gain a little, where we think we'll lose a little, that we need to cut those 75 jobs. Now, what about the next 75? The next 75 are directly related to a decrease in enrollment. We had anticipated that. We can handle that. These are directly related to the fact that we are now going to charter two schools next year that were TPS schools this year. And one of those is KIPP, which has been a contract school. And a contract school, Rich, means that we get the money, the state aid, and then we contract with KIPP. KIPP has a contract with us, but we still get the state aid. And then we pay them for educating those kids. And it's kind of a complex formula, but it's over now. KIPP is going to be a charter, and a charter means that all of the state aid flows directly to them. But they have to hire the teachers. So we're going to lose about 500 students from TPS enrollment, but KIPP will pick those up. And so some of those teachers will stay and go to work for the charter organization. The other charter impact that we have will be that we are closing Greeley Elementary School, and it will also be a charter. So those dollars will flow directly to Greeley. They will hire their own teachers. Again, I anticipate some of those teachers will want to go to work for the charter. Some of them, because of retirement, may choose to stay with TPS, but we will absorb them into the system if we need to. So that's not so onerous as the first 75.
And those 75 are what's going to result in different class allocations, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It will result in different class size allocations. That's right.
And let's talk a little bit about those class allocations, because you mentioned the K and pre-K will stay about the same, but first
right.
through third grade, the elementary age students will see an increase of one. The middle school up to 9 through 12 will receive an addition of two per classroom. By the time
right.
you're in high school, you're looking at average classrooms of 29.
That's it, exactly. That's correct, of
and
29.
Yeah, but, you know, when we think back to, seems like dark ages ago, House Bill 1017, we were looking on the elementary level, 20.
And we're
moving in the wrong direction on this.
Well, we're absolutely moving in the wrong direction. Class size does matter. That's all there is to it. And, you know, one of the keys to all of this is what you said, we're looking at average is what we're looking at. And when you're looking at average, I mean, that easily could result in class sizes well above 30 at the high school and the middle school level. That's already happening in some cases. That's already happening. And I don't think there's any doubt but what that will happen next year. So we really do need those. We really do need those allocations back. And again, my frustration is that we actually have seen an increase in state revenues. And yet, and I would have thought that there would have been a movement to send some of that back. We're not even to 2008 budget levels at this time. And a couple of points that you made at the start of this interview were that every year teachers increase on the salary schedule, and you're expected to give the step increase, and that costs us a couple of million dollars a year. We had to work to be able to do that last year. It's very discouraging. It's very disheartening. It's disillusioning. If we're not able to give teachers at least a few hundred dollars step increase, so our real frustration and a source for us really speaking out is that the state legislature could correct this. Right now, we know that they have more than $50 million in excess revenues, and all I hear is that those revenues will be returned to taxpayers. Yet I believe that the state government has a responsibility to fund, just at a basic level, fund core state services, and education is certainly one of those. If that $50 million were to go back into the state aid funding formula, it would mean 80 allocations for TPS. That would take care of it. So what we're going to do is we're going to really scrap and fight for allocation by allocation to restore those, because we believe this time it will really have a negative impact on the schools. You know, we didn't complain a lot, Rich, when the revenues were down and everybody was taking cuts. In fact, we were grateful that education was shielded as much as possible from those cuts. And we have lost almost $23 million in Tulsa Public Schools over the last 3 years. $23 million. We cut 130 jobs out of the Education Service Center that were either here directly or were related to ESC and saved us $5 million. Everybody knows that we closed 14 schools and went through Project Schoolhouse in order to save over time another $5 million. And our savings this year are being realized right at about the $3 million level. We took out a contract with an energy ed program to manage our energy consumption. We have done everything we can to absorb that $23 million loss, but at a time when revenues are coming back, we would have hoped that education would be a priority with the state legislature.
My guest today is Tulsa Public School Superintendent Keith Ballard. TPS is expecting to trim 150 teachers all in all from its classroom staff. Some of that is due to enrollment decline, but they have expended their federal stimulus funds of about $7.5 million, which helped maintain classroom staff levels over the last few years. And so it's looking like 75 teachers will have to be trimmed for that part of the decline. Give us a sense of what this will look like. I think you've said that about half of the elementary schools will have a reduction in teachers.
Sure. Well, I want to make one point very clear that we're not, again, planning on doing any involuntary reduction in force. Typically, through attrition, we lose about 300 teachers a year.
Okay.
So we'll be able to handle it all through attrition. But we're going to see significant changes in the number of teachers that are at, you know, each of our schools. You know, for example, we'll lose at a school like, and I don't have all of these in front of me right now, but I can tell you, you know, all of them catch my attention. But at a school like Edison Middle School, for example, I remember that being three or four teachers that we were going to lose. Or I remember at Carver we had a couple. And at the high schools, and this is a combination of the loss of dollars as well as a loss of enrollment. But it's still pretty significant, and I know that Hale High School was one that had 10 or even a little bit over 10. I worry about Booker T. Washington, which is one of the top 100 high schools in the United States, and dependent upon being able to provide adequate class sizing for our IB curriculum, and I think we were scheduled to lose about four teachers from Booker T. Washington. So, you know, it's just really obviously very concerning. And then we take a look about, you know, programs that we could lose. And I might even move into that and say that, you know, we're taking a look at all of our foreign language sections, including some of our upper-level foreign language sections, at all of them. We're having to look at those. We're looking at some of our fine arts classes where we have, and although they're small classes, they're important classes like theater and orchestra. We're having to take a look at our driver's education programs. We're having to take a look at credit recovery, which has been a tremendous program. But personnel-wise, you know, it's fairly, you know, labor-intensive. It takes quite a few teachers to run our credit recovery program, but we're so proud of that program. You know, speech and drama. Another area that we're looking at that's really attracted a lot of attention has been in the area of our coaches. If we would move all athletics after school, then that would free up teaching slots, because right now athletics starts last hour of the day. So those certified coaches who are certified teachers, they're out on the practice field with our kids on the last period. If we would move all of that after school, then it would free them up with more teaching slots. The problem with that is that a lot of our kids work. I mean, you know, we're in an urban setting. 88% of our kids come from low-income families. Transportation's a problem. Work is a problem. And yet, I will say that all extracurricular activities are very important to the health of a high school. Very important, whether it's athletics or whether it's band or whether it's speech and drama, no matter what it is, those are very important programs, and I really don't want to have to do that. But if we don't recover those allocations this year, then I think that is something that is likely to happen. You know, we're being very careful about saying what will happen, but we're also truthfully telling the public these are some of the things that could happen.
You mentioned extracurricular activities, but you also mentioned foreign language, which says this is a this is preparatory to college. It seems like that would be a last resort cut. Any other academic areas that you usually think of in preparing students for a higher education that is likely to be cut?
Unfortunately, we are at last resort, Rich, and there's a foreign language requirement that only goes to a certain level. Now, by me, you know, I'm not advocating by me saying that. I'm not advocating for that at all.
So you think like a Spanish 3 or 4 or German 3 or 4?
Yeah. Which I think are terribly critical. But yes, those are the ones that we are talking about. And again, it doesn't mean we have decided on any of these. Instead, we're going to educate the public. We're going to educate the legislature. and hope that they will restore some of those cut dollars so that we don't have to do that. But those are possible impacts that we're studying.
What about, I know that at one point you mentioned upper-level science classes. Is that things like preparatory for, again, towards college, for getting ahead in college?
Not necessarily requirements for college, but certainly helping to prepare students by having some of those upper-level, more highly specialized kinds of science classes that we think are very important, that we think will go extra distance in preparing students for college. But once again, if it's not something that is absolutely required and they can be rolled over into other science classes, then that's what we may need to do. Yes, we are specifically looking at those kinds of classes.
And of course, a lot of those classes will have lower enrollments, and that was the other area you mentioned, was any class that has low enrollment. So if
right.
you have like a college prep class in the sciences, or maybe
right.
a higher math, a pre-calc or calculus one,
yeah.
and it has low enrollment, these are the sort of things you'll be looking at, right?
Well, you're right on target, Rich. You're right on target. Classes that do have lower enrollment, but that are, we believe, critical to the success of a school. And we don't want to lose those classes. We don't want them to go by the wayside because we had to drop the teacher allocation. Traditionally, Tulsa Public Schools has been able to maintain a pretty nice class size load. I mean, I think we are probably below our counterparts in the suburbs, but I'll remind you again that 88% of our kids come from low income, and there's a reason to have smaller class sizes. And kids who are behind, like in reading classes, then we absolutely must hold the line at smaller classes. I know that there's been a lot written all year about some of the excellent schools in the suburbs, Union and Jinx and Broken Arrow, about the danger of their class sizes. That's all been, you know, written about all year. They made their adjustments last year. They didn't rely on spreading out the jobs dollars like we did. And so we're just kind of catching up to them. And my point is this, that this issue is not specific to Tulsa Public Schools. This is an issue all over the state. It's just that we are going to speak up about it. Our locally elected board members want to talk about it at the board table, and we want to be very open, and we don't want to just say, oh, we'll make this work. Well, we can make it work, but there are consequences for making it work, and those are some of the areas that you and I just talked about.
I think getting back to House Bill 1017, you know, this was the vote of the people who said they wanted, you know, no more than 20 students in an elementary school. They didn't want more than about
right.
25 in your secondary school levels.
Yeah.
And you're well above it.
Now we're five past it. You know, we have 24, we have 25 in classrooms. And yes, 1017 was approved by the legislature, protested through initiative petition. We had a vote on 1017, and I honestly believe that the general public do not want these class sizes in Oklahoma schools. I really do believe that. And someone needs to speak out and say, here's what's going on. We're making it work, but this is not what the general public wants. Instead, what you hear is you hear smaller government, smaller government. Well, this is what smaller government looks like. And I don't think that's what people really anticipated when they said they wanted smaller government. I think the core services need to be taken care of. I also object to the fact that the legislature is so strongly considering another cut in the state income tax at the expense of being able to provide core services for the state, not just in education, but in road and bridge repair and in meeting the basic needs. Take a look at the size of our budget compared to other states. Take a look at where we are in revenue per pupil. We're 49th in the United States, and we're not doing anything to help move us forward even the littlest bit.
My guest today is Keith Ballard, Tulsa Public School Superintendent. I know that you, at your meeting, basically said it's time for the community to speak up. How is the board of the school district, and how is the administration going to try to to foster that, the people speaking up about what they want to see.
Exactly what we're doing today, Rich. Exactly what we're, what you and I are doing today. This Board of Education chose to bring this forward and discuss this at the board table. And that takes, you know, that takes gumption. That takes intestinal fortitude to say, we're going to talk about it. This is an issue. Our jobs money is going away. Here's exactly how many allocations we're going to lose because of dollars. Here's exactly how many we're going to lose because of enrollment. And here's what we expect the impact to be. And then we send out the allocation notices. And what we hear immediately, justifiably so, is we hear parents saying, wait a minute, we don't want to lose two teachers at our school. And they come immediately to me, to the associate superintendents in charge of elementary and secondary. And now we're starting to go out and talk to parent groups. And what we're saying is, this isn't our issue. We don't want to do this. Well, it is our issue because we're responsible for carrying out the mandates of the state. But if they would take that on to the legislature, and if parents en masse would contact legislators, I'll promise you that there would be a movement to do this. What's frustrating about this is the state can afford to do it now. And if enough parents understand what we're doing, we're not just going to quietly cut a couple of allocations. We're talking to principals. We're asking them to inform their parents. And when we hear from parents, we say, we'll be glad to come out and talk to you about this and be glad to go through the formula with you. But what you need to understand is if the legislature would just put $50 million to restore that over $200 million that was cut statewide, then that would be enough to restore all of those allocations. So that's what you do. You talk openly and honestly about it. You work with the media. You do radio interviews. You do TV interviews. You talk with the newspaper, and you tell people openly and honestly what the impacts will be. And then if they start contacting legislators, the legislators will sit up and take notice.
Has the district itself set up meetings with the Tulsa legislators, so the senators and representatives that represent areas of the Tulsa Public School District? Have you sat down one-on-one with some of these legislators and sort of told them what this impact's going to be?
We have over time. You know, there are some who listen and there are some who don't. But I don't think that there's a Tulsa area legislator who does not understand exactly what is going on. Yes. We have sat down, school officials have sat down with various representatives. What we are told is, oh, it's a flat budget. You know, we have talked extensively with organizations like the State Administrators Organization or with the State School Boards Association, people who are at the Capitol every day, and said, you know, let them know what the impact is going to be. So, yeah, we have done that, and we will continue to do that. I'm intending this week to send a specific letter to every single member of the Tulsa delegation. But again, this isn't just Tulsa. We're the ones speaking out. You know, we have the big pulpit, and we're the ones who are speaking out. But I have had numerous superintendents from across the state contact me and say, thank you for speaking out. We can't seem to generate much of an audience here. So that's going to be the key, is that people are going to have to contact their legislators, and at the same time, we're communicating with them about, you know, what the results are of this action.
All right. Well, Dr. Ballard, we appreciate your time today.
Sure.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad to visit with you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Tulsa Public School Superintendent Dr. Keith Ballard speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
Maybe the debate about the Affordable Health Care Act, and if you're calling it Obamacare, stop. is not about politics, but memory. So much anger about a mechanism to help the uninsured. Really? People on the Supreme Court steps praying? For what exactly? The freedom to return to a system that almost everyone hated 14 milliseconds before the bill was approved by Congress? Please, ask any parent who tried to find or keep coverage for their diabetic children how much freedom there was in that system. Okay, but this isn't about insurance. It's about America. So what happened to us? And maybe to understand what went wrong in this country, you have to remember what went right. For decades, there was a promise of the common good, a common wealth, not the money, but of America itself. To find it, maybe you have to go back to when parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts walked across Poland to get to a place where they could get on a boat and arrive at Ellis Island with the proverbial dime in their pocket. A time in America when people got off subways with their lunch in a bag and went to the City University of New York. When the WPA hired mathematicians and poets to teach. When millions took advantage of the GI Bill. When interstate highways made it possible to make a living driving a truck. When student loans and food stamps made it possible for med students to buy frozen pizza. When Social Security allowed a cab driver who had worked for 40 years, 11 hours a day, 6 days a week, to retire to Boca Raton, Florida, and drive around in a blue Volkswagen. My family, my life was based in New York and Brooklyn, and later on, a town much like where the Arnolds lived in the Wonder Years. Actually, I think it was that town. But you didn't have to see the Statue of Liberty at daybreak to be a part of that America. You could have found it in Tennessee Williams, New Orleans, or Baxter Black's New Mexico, or Joan Didion's California, or Billy and Tracy Letts' Oklahoma. My grandparents, who bought that 69 Volkswagen when they were in their 60s, their first car, probably would have loved Branson as much as they loved Coney Island. This was our shared DNA, that we were in this together. And even if it wasn't always efficient or equitable, and whoever said societies and cultures and people were good at that, it worked. For the most part, it worked. We, this nation, subsidized each other's lives, from the free tuition at colleges on the Upper East Side of Manhattan to the hamburger that didn't kill a five-year-old because a government inspector discovered a mad cow in the middle of Nebraska, to the traffic lights in Chelsea, Oklahoma, to the pacemakers in the chests of our grandparents. It worked. It was an incredible investment the country made in us. We made in ourselves, we made in each other, even though none of it made a profit. Maybe we should remember that, too.
Barry Friedman is a local writer, a stand-up comic, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, you can listen online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org and simply look for Studio Tulsa and look through the list. We've got a few shows to listen to. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.